originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Sutton again. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, and of course, this is the show trainers listen to. As always, happy to have you tuning in on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201 and listening worldwide on your computer, tablet, or mobile device with live streaming provided on our HRN website at horseracingradio.net. This is going to be a little bit of a different type of show for you here tonight. And in my opinion, being a horse racing fan, first and foremost, one of the most enjoyable interviews you will ever hear. Last week, when we were at Pimlico to broadcast the Preakness, two of the greatest and most legendary trainers in the history of our sport, D-Wayne Lucas and Bob Baffert, were kind enough to sit down with me together. They talked about their professional and their personal relationship. They talked about their strong friendship. And they talked about some of the moments that have helped define each of them in their respective careers. Now, the interview is about 25 or 26 minutes long. So I'm going to play it in its entirety here in the first half of the show and then replay it in the second half. It is that good. They were that good. So here it is. Wayne Lucas, Bob Baffert, on a very special edition of Trainer Talk. Hope you enjoy. Combined Hall of Fame trainers D-Wayne Lucas and Bob Baffert have saddled a total of 27 Triple Crown race winners.
27.
See, they're not fit to do the interview.
That means that we're really old.
14, 13,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. I was counting the one Saturday.
You're still one up, by the way.
Yeah, I was counting his on Saturday.
Oh, he's already giving
it
away.
He's jinxing me. He's trying to jinx me. I know what he's doing. He's working me. It's a quarter horse thing, you know. They try to get in your head. So you'll just, you know, you'll just take it easy and you'll just, that's one thing we bring from the quarter horses. It's mind games, you know. And so a lot of these thoroughbred guys are just not used to it, you know. But it worked in the quarter horses game.
For sure. I used to always, when they would get a young guy, you know, that was going to ride his first Kentucky Derby, I used to always, if he was out there in the morning, I'd go over and I'd put my arm around him. I'd say, look, it's just another race. Don't worry about it. You'll look down there, it'll be Jerry Bailey, Gary Stevens, Pat Day. I said, these Hall of Famers, but don't let them intimidate you. Just relax, exhale, and their eyes get about that big around, you know.
No, you can tell, you know, like the younger guys, when they come out and ride on those big days, and they have a look on them like a deer staring at the headlight. I mean, you can tell it affects a lot of them.
There's no gamesmanship on your part, is there, Coach?
Well, I have a lot of fun with this guy, and we enjoy it and try to make it a little bit lighter. I don't joke around too much with some of the other guys that we don't, you know, being my age, I don't know them all, but it's fun to, the camaraderie here at the Preakness is second to none. And I think it's because we're all sharing the same locker room. We're all in the same barn, so we interact every day. At the Derby, they got us scattered all over, and then the Belmont even more so. So once we're out there and we get a chance to interact and talk and share a cup of coffee in the morning, it makes it pretty special.
You've been here before, Bob. When you hear the words Bob Baffert, five-time Kentucky Derby winning trainer, what are some of the things that immediately come to mind?
That means I was pretty lucky to, you know, come across those kind of horses. I mean, you have to come across. I mean, there's a lot of really good trainers out there that never had a chance to win the Derby and to go at it. But I think a lot of it comes from our background with Wayne. You know, we started with quarter horses. We had to, you know, the horsemanship involved in quarter horses to get them, you know, to point him to a race, run on a Saturday, and then we come back the following Saturday and want them to run even faster, you know, you just got to qualify. You're talking, you know, out of 500-800 horses, and then they're going to pick 10. You're one of the – now you got to come back and do it again. So I think we – that's why when they made the two-week turnaround, that's like a lifetime where we came from.
Yeah, we think that's a luxury. For sure.
Do you agree with that, Wayne?
The horsemanship. I even made that statement when I first came over from the court. But we, starting from the background that we both had, we didn't have a lot of big money behind us. We had to select horses that looked like athletes and do them. When you're spending your own money or you don't have a lot of money and you're in that game, we both didn't start out with big, you know, money people behind us. You really start paying attention to confirmation and what'll work and what won't work in your training methods and everything. And I think that's invaluable.
You know, I think it's interesting that when you think about the careers of Bob Baffert and Dwayne Lucas, you're intertwined in a lot of ways because of what you've accomplished in this sport. But you're also intertwined because of one day in 1996 at Churchill Downs in that Kentucky Derby, Cavenier, Grindstone, they end up noses apart. How often do you bounce back and forth about that, or have you talked about that over the years?
We don't talk about it much, but we're very aware of it. I was the lucky one that day. I think Jerry Bailey put on a beautiful ride. I think if they ran those two horses five times, you'd have maybe four different outcomes, you know, as far as the closeness and everything. It was one of those deals where Grindstone was way out on the racetrack, Cavenier was on the rail, and had they been head and head or close in the one and two or three and four hole, it probably would have turned around. I wasn't worried about him. I told everybody when he came over from Santa Anita, I said, we're going to have to buckle down here. He's going to be very successful. I watched him at the quarter horses. We came from that background, and I was very confident that I didn't know it would get to this level. I didn't know we'd both be having six Preakness winners and he'd have five Derbies, but I thought we'd damn sure be okay. I wasn't worried about it.
I'll never forget. We were I'd won three Derbies, and we were invited to the ESPYs. And it was a great deal. They come, they pick you up. It's after War Emblem had won. And so they're going to pick you up, and we're going to take you there, and we sit down. So Jill and I were all excited about that. So we get there, and we're like probably 20, 30 rows up, you know, from the stage. And I look down there, and about five rows in front, Wayne Lucas is sitting there. I go, wow. He said, you're in the fifth row. They got me back there in row 30. He says, and he says, I'll never forget, he says, that's the difference between winning four Derbies and three Derbies. I'll never forget that.
I didn't know that line, but that's great.
But it was like, damn, you know, like, he's right, you know. So I go, but you know what? We've had a lot of fun with it. I remember the Grindstone. That was the toughest defeat. And the reason I say tough, I was just hoping to light the board. It was my first time there. And Unbridled Song, he was the horse. I mean, he was, and he had the foot issues, and he was stable next to me. It was just a circus over there. I'd never seen anything like it. And so all of a sudden, he's got the lead, and all of a sudden, he quits about the eighth pole. And then Cavenier inherits the lead. And I was like, wow, I can't believe I'm in the lead in the Kentucky Derby. And please, where's the finish line? I'm like, and the finish line, I hate the Churchill finish line, way, way down there. And I've got bad seats. You know, I came, they had me, I was at the 16th pole. So, and I'm watching, and there's not a television set in front of me. And I look over, and I'm looking around. I see this horse coming down, and he's got a white bridle. I go, oh, my God, it's like a white bridle. You know, so, and he's coming down, and he's coming, but he's way on the outside. And they hit the wire, and I thought I won. And I'll never forget, I just felt this feeling like, oh, I just want to jump out of my skin, like I won the Kentucky Derby and this and that. I'm looking around, and I'm looking around at everybody like, I think we held on. And then you start asking strangers, what do you think? You know, like, you got it, Bob, you got it. You know? And then all of a sudden, the owner, Kevin Ayer, she turns to me and she puts up, "We got second." I'm like, how would she know? You know, it's far away. So I'll never forget. I just stood there in my box and I got to thinking, maybe he got beat. And they kept showing the replay and you really couldn't tell.
No.
And then I was watching the trying to watch the body language of Chris McCarron and Jerry Bailey. And Chris McCarron, he didn't seem like he was like, you know, he wasn't. And Jerry seemed like he was like smiling, like his body language was pretty good. And I go, man, this is not good. And at the time, I didn't know my sister-in-law was running, screaming down in front of him.
Yeah,
telling him, like, we got it. Just smoke. So he's thinking, well, I guess they must be down there or whatever. But
I couldn't see the tote board. I was in the tunnel, or the walkway behind the box seats, and here they come, bang and screaming. And I thought, oh, Christ, the number's up. And I get down there is no number up yet.
But it was like, and then when they finally put the number, it was forever. It was like, well, they asked me, what do you think? I said, you know what? I know what it feels like to win the Kentucky Derby. I just felt that. And that's what it's all about. What's it feel like to win a gold medal? And I really felt for about 4 minutes that I'd won the Kentucky Derby until they put the number up. So then, but then that night it hit me and I thought, wow, I will never get another chance. That's it. I blew my chance. And I'm thinking that freaking Wayne Lucas, that son of a gun. You know, that's just, I'm pulling it mildly, okay? He came through. How does he do it? He just, you know, race after race. And so, but it was really, it was an experience. It was a humbling experience. But yet I was lucky to, you know, even to run second. And then to come back and with Silver Charm. And when he got the lead, I see a horse coming. And I'm thinking, please, Lord, you can't do this to me again. I can't take it. You know, I'm thinking, is it Greg Norman in the Masters? I'm thinking, they're going to start calling me Greg Norman. He held on. It was like for a year that I held that. You know, it just went away, and it was just, I mean, so, you know, I think the Lord works in mysterious ways. I think you know, he's put me through. I think when I had the heart attack, he wasn't done with me yet. I want you to suffer a little bit more. And then to come back and finally, you know, get a triple crown after going through it, you know, three times before. But you know what? You have to count your blessing. But the reason I'm here today and he's here today is because we don't let up. We don't rest on our laurels. You have to. In this game, you have. And for him, 82. I mean, that, and he's still, he's sharp. He knows, you know, he sees my horse. He know. He watches everything. Mm-hmm. He knows everything what's going on. And so I hope at 82, I can get on a horse and ride him around and do all this.
If he goes till 82,
I don't think I can make 82 anyway.
There'll be the records will be stacked up so deep that all these poor son of a guns that want to be a horse trainer will give it up and start bagging groceries or something. I'm telling you, there's no stopping him. I told him the other day, there's no stopping him.
What makes Bob Baffert so good, Wayne?
He's an excellent horseman. He comes off as maybe, you know, being laid back and not as intense. He is an excellent horseman. He knows what to do with the horse. When Justify won his first race, somebody said, well, he won't have the season and everything. I said, are you kidding me? I said, he's in the right barn, trust me. Nate said, well, he might have only two or three races, this and that, a 20-horse field. I said, you guys are whistling in the dark. I said, trust me. Throw all that out in your handicap, and if that horse is the best horse, watch out. He's coming. I really feel that about Bob. I think he just he's better.
Now, the thing is about it is that when I run a horse, I put a pretty good foundation into him. I mean, I probably could have run him earlier, but I wanted to get a good foundation. I really wasn't thinking Kentucky Derby with him. I just let him. He came around. I really thought McKenzie was going to be my Derby horse and could win the Kentucky Derby. So. These horses, I mean, they come around and, you know, and now I'm in a point in my career where Wayne and I, we had to go buy our own. And so now And these agents, they didn't want to send us horses because they were so afraid that we would start buying the horses. And I think that's was the toughest part. And now it's like I can sit back now, and now they can, these, you know, if you don't train for those big outfits, they, you know, they have all these good horses and they send them to you, and it makes my job so much more easier. So but it took me a long time to get to that.
You level. Earn that though, Bob. You your eye, your ability to find a runner, they don't just send you. You don't wake up every day and say, look, let's send Lucas and Baffert the horses. You know, you have to earn that. We got some young guys coming up now that are earning that right to get those clientels and everything. But just like Justify's owners, those, you look down the line, those are very important people. They didn't just wake up someday and say, let's give it to Baffert. They gave it to Bob Baffert because he's going to do the best job and he's going to get the job done. You have to earn that.
Wayne, he refers to you as his idol. What's it mean to hear those words?
Well, I'm completely flattered, and I got a book coming out, and he did there's a couple excerpts in there from him, and I read them, and I thought, gosh, you know, that's probably the most gratifying thing. That, you know, we get thrown a lot of bouquets, Bob, myself, a lot of people, a lot of it's fluff, but I, coming from him, I felt sincerely that was the highest compliment. And then letting me train even for 10 days, his wife's horse was a kick. I thought, this is a kick. I got Bob's wife's horse, and then he dropped another one off with me, and we had some fun with that. But that was the highest compliment. I got a quote in the book, Bob. You haven't seen it. It's you and I standing there. And I said, the quote in the book is, I don't think he can walk on water, but I think he knows where the rocks are.
I like that.
That's in the book with your picture.
That's a great quote. But why is Wayne your idol?
Because I grew up when I was training quarter horse. I was in Arizona, and I'll never forget, he was, you know, he came, he trained. Matter of fact, I ended up training for the same guy. We've had the same clients. And he came to Sonoyta, Arizona. That's where I started out. It's out in the middle of nowhere. It's like 30 miles from Nogales, Arizona, where I grew up. Little dusty, little fair track, but they had a fraternity there. And he shows up, like, he comes in with his fancy rig with names on it. I mean, this guy, and here we are, we're just country little bumpkins, you know, and he goes in there and comes in there and he's got every horse is by the who's who racing. And I'll never forget, I was on the paddock just watching. I go, man, there he is. That's Wayne Lucas. I was with my dad. That's him. That's the guy, man. He's the man, you know. And so when you see him, I'm like, and then later on, I went to Los Alamitos. I even called him up for a job once. He doesn't remember this. Thank God he doesn't remember. But I was graduating from high school, and I was wanting to be a jockey, but I wanted to go to work for him as an exercise boy. So he's in Bay Meadows at the time. So I wrote all this down. I was going to talk to him. I was scared to death to talk to him. I found out where he was staying. He's at some hotel there. So I wrote these things down so I wouldn't stutter and you know. So all of a sudden, it took me about a week to finally get the nerve up to call him.
Oh, jeez.
So I call him up, and I think back, like, I probably called him up, like, at 1 in the afternoon, which he's probably taking a nap because this guy gets up at 3 in the morning, you know. So I call him up. He says, Mr. Lucas, my name is Bob Baffert. I'm, I just graduated from school, and I want to, you know, been wanting to jockey, but I really like to come to work for you as a gal boy. I like to learn, you know, I want to, you know, learn the game. And, you know, he could have easily have said, you know what, it's all right, but you know what, I got a lot of people, but, you know, I'm sorry, you know, I can't help you. He was like, you would have thought he goes, oh man, you fit the description perfect, what I was looking for, and I just hired a guy a week ago.
Was I intuitive or what?
And he says,
pretty good.
Man, he goes, man, you were like, really? And I go, oh, really? Oh, yeah. I go, wow. And when I hung up the phone, I was like, wow, man, that guy, what a great, I mean, the impression, that guy is great. And I'm sure now he probably, yeah, all right. And that's the way he is. You know, he makes you feel good about yourself, you know. And so, and I think that's what he's, I mean, he could have run for president, you know. He'd blow by Trump, you know. He was like, it was one of those things where.
Getting deep now.
And then, but, so then I finally, when I, and then we went, I was at Los Alamitos, and we went to Del Mar, this friend of mine that he knew. We were going to go, let's go to Del Mar with our cowboy hats. We drive down there, and we're in line to get in, and we see Wayne Lucas. So this guy that he knew, it was Vern Goodman. He trained for a spot. He said, there's Wayne, let me go get, maybe he'll get some passes. So he goes down. And Wayne's coming in there. He's driving some fancy freaking Cadillac or something. Whatever. Him, he's all suited up. This guy looks like he's getting ready to, you know, give a speech or something. So, and we're just got our cowboy hats on, our jeans. He gives us here are these passes, but give them back to me in the paddock because I need those passes. So he gives us, like, there's six of us, these passes. I get mine. I'm like, the who's who. He had, like, decline. You had all these big name Robert Moore. I think I was Robert Moore's wife, you know. And so we go in there and go in the paddock and we give them to him, and they're at Del Mar. We're like in awe of everything, you know. And so he's got a horse in the feature. They said, I think I can win the feature. So we're watching. We bet a couple bucks. He wins the feature, and we see him later on. He says, hey, you guys should have come by the winner's circle. Well, we didn't want to go down there. We felt like it's a bunch of hayseeds, you know, we want to show up there. But he was just, I mean, he could have just blown us off or whatever, but that's not the way he is, you know. He's always been a great ambassador to racing, you know, and he does, you know, unfortunately, sometimes it's a lot of added pressure to us. You know, we want to be an ambassador. A lot of guys, you know, you're too popular, and people get on you, and, like, you know, it's all about them or whatever. And, you know, but we can't help it that, you know, we've been blessed with all these good horses and we've won these things. But it's like, I think there's we have a duty to, you know, really push the racing because, you know, it's a beautiful sport. We want to stay in it. It's been great to us. And so we need as many fans as possible.
Wayne, I remember you telling me a story once that you came here and won your first Preakness with Codex in 1980. Right. And you turned to your son, Jeff, and he said, hey, this isn't all that hard. We're going to win a whole bunch of these. And you had to wait another 5 years before
winning colors, yeah. And that was 80 to 88. I remember winning it, and I thought, you know, gosh, just they're making a big deal of this. Of course, we'd won some major quarter horse races, but I thought, this is not that big a deal. You know, we come in here, and we won the Hollywood Derby that year, the Santa Anita Derby, and now the Preakness. And I thought, this is no big deal. I found out later, these damn things are hard. We went 8 years before Winning Colors came along.
You've been there, Bob.
I remember I was training quarter horses, and I really became a fan of Thoroughbred Winning Colors. You know, I was following her, and she won the Santa Anita Derby, and I'd watch the show at night. They had a replay show, and I didn't know what had happened, so I'm watching the show, and I watched her win. Just so then I became a fan, so I always rooted for Wayne Lucas, everybody in Los Alamitos, and he wins the Kentucky Derby, and then he came to the Preakness, and that's when it was Woody Stevens.
Yeah, 49er.
49er, and there was a rift. There was like a big rift and everything, and I didn't like Woody Stevens, okay? I didn't like how dare he, give my man Wayne, you know, a hard time, you know? It was like...
Woody was very, very intent on. He said, she will not get on the lead. She will not get an easy trip. And actually, they laid on her all the way down the backside, and he ran seventh. He used 49er just to make sure she wouldn't win. That's how upset he was that, you know, a new guy was coming into the game. And we ran third, but he ran seventh, and it was very controversial.
Well, I told you guys we were going to spend about 15 minutes together. I lied. It's been a little bit longer, but it's been enjoyable. Last question before I let you all go. What's different about Bob Baffert and Wayne Lucas now than when you came onto the Triple Crown scene all those years ago? Bob?
We both have stents. in our heart. That's what this business has done to us, okay? It's not that the road to the Triple Crown means stents in your heart.
Yeah. We both have new wives.
Yeah, new wives. Exactly. So other than that, nothing's changed.
Everything's the same.
Yeah.
I can't thank you enough for spending a little time here. Really enjoyed the visit, and all the best moving forward and all the best on Saturday. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us. Thanks so much.
Right,
thanks
enjoy
for
it.
Having us.
And once again, my thanks to Dwayne Lucas and to Bob Baffert for taking the time to sit down with me at Pimlico last weekend. And wow, what a special interview that was. And special because they were so open and so candid about different things, you know, talking about their relationship and talking about Dwayne Lucas being Bob Baffert's idol. And Wayne, you heard him in the interview talking about how humbling that really is because of the fact that when you're Bob Baffert and you're Wayne Lucas, you often get a lot of praise heaped upon you for various things because you've accomplished so much in the sport, and they continue to do so. Both of them really continue to reach lofty levels. Bob probably more than Wayne at this point in his career. But as Wayne pointed out, they often get different accolades and compliments thrust upon them. And he said sometimes he described it as fluff. But when Bob Baffert tells Wayne Lucas that he's his idol, Wayne said that's the ultimate compliment. And I would have to agree. That's just, you know, coming from Bob, their roots going all the way back to the quarter horse days. You heard him talk about that. And then the story that they told about Grindstone and looking back on that experience from both sides. And I don't know, as they were telling that story, I'm just trying to stay out of the way. I didn't want to ask a question. As a racing fan, I just wanted to sit back and let them talk. And as they were describing that particular day and that particular race, it was like things were coming back to them that they had forgotten about. And maybe they were even telling stories and bringing things up that they were telling for the first time, or maybe they haven't told in 20 plus years. But that made it even more special and more remarkable. It just kind of flowed from there. And again, the two of them, such good friends, and this so-called rivalry between them. Yeah, they're competitive. They like to win. They've been doing it together a very long time. But I think if Wayne wasn't going to win the Preakness, which he came awful close with Bravazo, he almost pulled another rabbit out of a hat. If he wasn't going to win, I think he's happy to see Bob Baffert win. That's how close they are. All right, going to get to a quick break. We'll come back. Going to replay that entire interview for you again. If you missed any portion of it, stay with us. That's coming up next on Trainer Talk.
Selected sales, superior results. Nominate now to Phasic Tipton's selected yearling sales, which are stronger than ever. The July sale for precocious athletic yearlings, the prestigious Saratoga sale, where leading buyers have searched for their next champion or classic winner for nearly 100 years, and the New York bred sale, which offers the cream of the New York bred crop. Learn more and nominate at phasicnoms.com. Phasic Tipton selected yearling sales, stronger than ever.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
He's almost like an Uncle Mo clone. I mean, identical, big, long, big stretching stride. And I bred about 14 mares to him last year. On top of just owning the 14, which I won't sell, I always keep and I'll race, I'll wind up going to the yearling sales, I'll wind up going to the two-year-old sales. And if I see a really, really nice artwork, I'm not gonna be afraid to spend some big money on them. You know, to me, I think artwork at $15,000 is probably one of the best deals out there in Kentucky.
Outwork, standing at Windstar Farm.
Kentucky Downs is home to 5 outstanding days of racing beginning September 1st, highlighted by 14 stakes races, 4 graded stakes, and a record $10 million in purses, with increases to the Calumet Farm Kentucky Turf Cup and the Taurus Mile. The new Kentucky Downs Juvenile Turf Sprint will serve as a stepping stone to the new Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint, and all Kentucky breds race for $130,000 in maiden events and $145,000 in allowance races. Kentucky Downs, beginning September 1st.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with the DRF Multi-Track PP Pack. You'll get 5 full-card PPs featuring today's best racing for only $6. Each DRF Multi-Track PP Pack features full-card DRF Pass performances for the top tracks you want to play, handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. It's everything you need to play today's top races for only $6. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available at DRF.com/multitrack. You'll save even more with a monthly, quarterly, or annual plan. Experience the ease and convenience of buying multi-track PPs the next time you play. Print them out and take them with you to the track, or use them while you play from home on your desktop or tablet. Available now at DRF.com/multitrack. So get DRF's best value. Download full card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit DRF.com/multitrack today.
The road to the Triple Crown is heating up with the weather, and there are talented horses in every division running on racing's biggest days. Pope Jude reports highlight top-class racing from coast to coast and put you onto horses rounding to excellent form long before the general public becomes aware of them. Our on-track presence at major racing venues gives us an edge that others don't have, and we share what we know with you. You can win money at the racetrack. Visit PopeJude.com. That's PopeJude.com.
Point Given is widely regarded as one of the most talented horses never to win the Triple Crown. Having finished a disappointing 5th as the favorite in the 2001 Kentucky Derby, he redeemed himself with a winning performance in the Preakness Stakes 2 weeks later, and would arrive in New York as an overwhelming favorite in the final leg of racing's Triple Crown, the Belmont Stakes. Facing a stellar field that included Derby winner Monarcos and talented rivals AP Valentine, Invisible Ink, and Dollar Bill, Point Given would leave little doubt about the best 3-year-old in the country.
Here is a powerful, compelling performance by Point Given. He is under the line to win the Belmont by 11 lengths at the finish. Sensational effort here. AP Valentine finished second, and Monarcos was third.
His dominating 12.5-length victory was among the largest in the 133-year history of the race. He had left his Hall of Fame jockey, Gary Stevens, in awe and left racing fans to wonder what might have been. The 2001 renewal of the Test of the Champion provided yet another memorable moment in Belmont Stakes history.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, walking you through a very special edition of the program here tonight. If you are just joining us, Dwayne Lucas and Bob Baffert, two of the greatest trainers that the sport has ever seen, took the time to sit down with me at Pimlico prior to the Preakness Stakes. Of course, they talked about Justify. They talked about Wayne's two horses with Bravazo, who would eventually end up second, and Sporting Chance. But then they also spent quite a bit of time talking about their personal relationship and looking back on some of the moments in their careers that kind of intertwine them. They're intertwined in so many ways because of the records that they have both set and the things they've been able to accomplish. But they talked about that grindstone episode when Bob came to the Derby for the first time with Cavaneer, and I think that's a very special story. You kind of hear him talk about that from both sides, and that to me was really enjoyable, just to sit back and listen and let the two Hall of Famers tell their stories. If you missed any portion of the show, it's pretty simple. All you have to do is head to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show, all of our Trainer Talk shows, all of our Jock Talk shows. They're all there for you. Horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. You can listen anytime at your leisure. Not often that we do this, but I'm going to replay that entire interview back for you here in the second half of the show. There are people, of course, in radio that are always tuning in, tuning out. We want to make sure you have the opportunity to hear this interview in its entirety because, in my opinion, it was that special. So we'll do that momentarily. Do want to remind you, though, of a couple of HRN race broadcasts coming up as we begin now to turn our attention toward Justify's bid for a Triple Crown, Saturday, June 9th at Belmont Park. We'll be there as your exclusive radio home of the Belmont Stakes. And the Penn Mile, which comes up the week before the Belmont. Anthony Stabile and Steve Grabowski are going to make the trip to Penn National, and they will bring you that coverage. That is on Saturday, June 2nd. That begins our road to the Breeders' Cup, where we start to kind of look ahead to the Breeders' Cup World Championships in November. And along the way, we're going to cover a lot of those major Breeders' Cup prep races the next couple of months. So check it out. It is Saturday, June 2nd, the Penn Mile. Saturday, June 9th, the Belmont Stakes. And that Triple Crown bid for Justify would be amazing if he could pull it off. Two Triple Crowns in the span of 4 years for Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. Just unbelievable. We'll see what happens, and you'll hear it all right here on HRRN. All right, without further ado, let's get you back to that interview. Here it is again. Wayne Lucas, Bob Baffert. Very special visit. Enjoy.
Combined Hall of Fame trainers Dwayne Lucas and Bob Baffert have saddled a total of 27 Triple Crown race winners.
27.
See, they're not fit to do the interview.
That means that we're really old.
14, 13, yeah. Right?
Yeah, that's right. I was counting the one Saturday.
You're still one up, by the way.
Yeah, I was counting his on Saturday.
Oh, he's already giving
you
the win.
He's jinxing me. He's trying to jinx me. I know what he's doing. He's working me. It's a quarter horse thing, you know. They try to get in your head. So you'll just take it easy, and you'll just that's one thing we bring from the quarter horses. It's mind games, you know. And so a lot of these thoroughbred guys are just not used to it, you know. But it worked in the quarter horses game
for sure. I used to always, when they would get a young guy, you know, that was going to ride his first Kentucky Derby, I used to always, if he was out there in the morning, I'd go over and I'd put my arm around him. I'd say, look, it's just another race. Don't worry about it. You'll look down there, it'll be Jerry Bailey, Gary Stevens, Pat Day. I said, these Hall of Famers, but don't let them intimidate you. Just relax, exhale. Their eyes get about that big around, you know.
No, you can tell, you know, like the younger guys, when they come out and ride on those big days, and they have a look on them like a deer staring at the headlight. I mean, you can tell it affects a lot of them.
There's no gamesmanship on your part, is there, Coach?
Well, I have a lot of fun with this guy, and we enjoy it and try to make it a little bit lighter. I don't joke around too much with some of the other guys that we don't, you know, being my age, I don't know them all, but it's fun to, the camaraderie here at the Preakness is second to none. And I think it's because we're all sharing the same locker room. We're all in the same barn, so we interact every day. At the Derby, they got us scattered all over, and then the Belmont even more so. So once we're out there and we get a chance to interact and talk and share a cup of coffee in the morning, it makes it pretty special.
You've been here before, Bob. When you hear the words Bob Baffert, five-time Kentucky Derby winning trainer, what are some of the things that immediately come to mind?
That means I was pretty lucky to, you know, come across those kind of horses. I mean, you have to come across. I mean, there's a lot of really good trainers out there that never had a chance to win the Derby and to go at it. But I think a lot of it comes from our background with Wayne. You know, we started with quarter horses. We had to, you know, the horsemanship involved in quarter horses to get them, you know, to point them to a race, run on a Saturday, and then we come back the following Saturday and want them to run even faster, you know, you just got to qualify. You're talking, you know, out of 500-800 horses, and then they're going to pick 10. You're one of the, now you got to come back and do it again. So I think that's why when the 2-week turnaround, That's like a lifetime where we came from.
Yeah, we think this is a luxury, for sure.
Do you agree with that, Wayne?
Quarter horse? Oh, yeah, the horsemanship. I even made that statement when I first came over from the court. But we, starting from the background that we both had, we didn't have a lot of big money behind us. We had to select horses that looked like athletes and make do them. When you're spending your own money or you don't have a lot of money and you're in that game, we both didn't start out with big, you know, money people behind us. You really start paying attention to conformation and what will work and what won't work in your training methods and everything. And I think that's invaluable.
You know, I think it's interesting that when you think about the careers of Bob Baffert and Dwayne Lucas, you're intertwined in a lot of ways because of what you've accomplished in this sport. But you're also intertwined because of one day in 1996 at Churchill Downs in that Kentucky Derby. Cavenier, Grindstone, they end up noses apart. How often do you bounce back and forth about that, or have you talked about that over the years?
We don't talk about it much, but we're very aware of it. I was the lucky one that day. I think Jerry Bailey put on a beautiful ride. I think if they ran those two horses five times, you'd have maybe four different outcomes, you know, as far as the closeness and everything. It was one of those deals where Grindstone was way out on the racetrack, Cavenier was on the rail, and had they been head and head or close in the one and two or three and four hole, it probably would have turned around. I wasn't worried about him. I told everybody when he came over from Santa Anita, I said, we're going to have to buckle down here. He's going to be very successful. I watched him at the quarter horses. We came from that background, and I was very confident that I didn't know it would get to this level. I didn't know we'd both be having six Preakness winners and he'd have five Derbies, but I thought we'd damn sure be okay. I wasn't worried about it.
I'll never forget, we were I'd won three Derbies, and we were invited to the ESPYs. And it was a great deal. They come, they pick you up. It's after War Emblem had won, and so they're going to pick you up, and we're going to take you there, and we sit down. So Jill and I were all excited about that. So we get there, and we're like probably 20, 30 rows up, you know, from the stage. And I look down there, and about five rows in front, Wayne Lucas is sitting there. I go, wow. He said, you're in the fifth row. And they got me back there in row 30. He says, I'll never forget. He says, that's the difference. We win in four Derbies and three Derbies. I'll never forget that.
I didn't know that line, but that's great.
But it was like, damn, you know, he's right, you know. So I go, but you know what? We've had a lot of fun with it. I remember the Grindstone. That was the toughest defeat. And the reason I say tough, I was just hoping to light the board. It was my first time there. And Unbridled Song, he was the horse. I mean, he was, and he had the foot issues, and he was stable next to me. It was just a circus over there. I'd never seen anything like it. And so all of a sudden, he's got the lead, and all of a sudden, he quits about the eighth pole, and then Cavenier inherits the lead. And I was like, wow, I can't believe I'm in the lead in the Kentucky Derby. And please, where's the finish line? I'm like, and the finish line, I hate the Churchill finish line, way, way down there. And I've got bad seats. You know, I came, they had me, I was at the 16th pole. So, and I'm watching, and there's not a television set in front of me. And I look over, and I'm looking around. I see this horse coming down, and he's got a white bridle. I go, oh, my God, it's like a white bridle. You know, so, and he's coming down, and he's coming, but he's way on the outside. And they hit the wire, and I thought I won. And I'll never forget, I just felt this feeling like, oh, I just want to jump out of my skin, like I won the Kentucky Derby and this and that. I'm looking around, and I'm looking around at everybody like, I think we held on. And then you start asking strangers, what do you think? You know, like, you got it, Bob, you got it. You know? And then all of a sudden the owner, Cavenier, she turns to me and she puts up, we got second. Like, how would she know? It's far away. So I'll never – I just stood there in my box, and I thought to thinking, maybe he got beat. And they kept showing the replay, and you really couldn't tell.
No.
And then I was watching the – trying to watch the body language of Chris McCarron and Jerry Bailey. And Chris McCarron, he didn't seem like he was like, you know, he wasn't. And Jerry seemed like he was, like, smiling. Like, his body language was pretty good. I go, man, this is not good. And at the time, I didn't know my sister-in-law was running, screaming down in front of him.
Yeah,
telling him, like, we got it. Just smoke. So he's thinking, well, I guess they must be down there or whatever. But
I couldn't see the tote board. I was in the tunnel, in, you know, or the walkway behind the box seats, and here they come banging and screaming, and I thought, oh Christ, the number's up. And I get down there is no number up yet.
But it was like, and then when they finally put the number, it was forever. It was like, well, they asked me, what do you think? I said, you know what, I know what it feels like to win the Kentucky Derby. I just felt that. And that's what it's all about. What's it feel like to win a gold medal? Or, and I really felt for about 4 minutes that I'd won the Kentucky Derby until they put the number up. So then, but then that night it hit me, and I thought, wow, I will never get another chance. That's it. I blew my chance. And I'm thinking, that freaking Wayne Lucas, that son of a gun. You know, that's just, I'm pulling it mildly, okay? He came through. How does he do it? He just, you know, race after race. And so, but it was really, it was an experience. It was a humbling experience. But yet I was lucky to, you know, even to run second. And then to come back and with a silver charm. And when he got the lead, I see a horse coming. And I'm thinking, please, Lord, you can't do this to me again. I can't take it. You know, I'm thinking, is it Greg Norman in the Masters? I'm thinking, I'm going to start calling me Greg Norman. And he held on. It was like for a year that I held that, you know, it just went away. And it was just, I mean, so, you know, I think the Lord works in mysterious ways. I think, you know, he's put me through. I think when I had the heart attack, he wasn't done with me yet. I want you to suffer a little bit more. And then to come back and finally, you know, get a triple crown after going through it, you know, three times before. But you know what? You have to count your blessing. But the reason I'm here today and he's here today is because we don't let up. We don't rest on our laurels. You have to. In this game, you have. And for him, 82. I mean, that, and he's still, he's sharp. He knows, you know, he sees my horse. He watches everything. Mm-hmm. He knows everything what's going on. And so I hope at 82, I can get on a horse and ride him around and do all this. Because
if he goes till 82,
I don't think I can make 82 anyway.
There'll be the records will be stacked up so deep that all these poor son of a guns that want to be a horse trainer will give it up and start bagging groceries or something. I'm telling you, there's no stopping him. I told him the other day, there's no stopping him.
What makes Bob Baffert so good, Wayne?
He's an excellent horseman. He comes off as maybe, you know, being laid back and not as intense. He is an excellent horseman. He knows what to do with the horse. When Justify won his first race, somebody said, well, he won't have the season and everything. I said, are you kidding me? I said, he's in the right barn, trust me. Nate said, well, he might have only two or three races, this and that, a 20-horse field. I said, you guys are whistling in the dark. I said, trust me. Throw all that out in your handicap, and if that horse is the best horse, watch out. He's coming. I really feel that about Bob. I think he just, he's better.
Now, the thing is about it is that when I run a horse, I put a pretty good foundation into him. I mean, I probably could have run him earlier, but I wanted to get a good foundation. I really wasn't thinking Kentucky Derby with him. I just let him, he came around. I really thought McKenzie was going to be my Derby horse and could win the Kentucky Derby. So, these horses, I mean, they come around and, you know, and now I'm in a point in my career where Wayne and I, we had to do it the hard, we had to go buy our own. And so now, and these agents, they didn't want to send us horses because they were so afraid that we would start buying the horses. And I think was the toughest part. And now it's like, I can sit back now, and now they can, these, you know, if you don't train for those big outfits, they, you know, they have all these good horses and they send them to you, and it makes my job so much more easier. So but it took me a long time to get to that
you level. Earn that though, Bob. You your eye, your ability to find a runner, they don't just send you. You don't wake up every day and say, look, let's send Lucas and Baffert the horses. You know, you have to earn that. We got some young guys coming up now that are earning that right to get those clientels and everything. But just like Justify's owners, those you look down the line, those are very important people. They didn't just wake up someday and say, let's give it to Baffert. They gave it to Bob Baffert because he's going to do the best job and he's going to get the job done. You have to earn that.
Wayne, he refers to you as his idol. What's it mean to hear those words?
Well, I'm completely flattered I got a book coming out, and he did. There's a couple excerpts in there from him, and I read them, and I thought, gosh, you know, that's probably the most gratifying thing. That you know, we get thrown a lot of bouquets, Bob, myself, a lot of people, a lot of it's fluff. But coming from him, I felt sincerely that was the highest compliment. And then letting me train. Even for 10 days, his wife's horse was a kick. I thought, this is a kick. I got Bob's wife's horse, and then he dropped another one off with me, and we had some fun with that. But that was the highest compliment. I got a quote in the book, Bob. You haven't seen it. It's you and I standing there. And I said, the quote in the book is, I don't think he can walk on water, but I think he knows where the rocks are.
I like that.
That's in the book with your picture.
That's a great quote. But why is Wayne your idol?
Because I grew up when I was training quarter horse. I was in Arizona, and I'll never forget. He was, you know, he came. He trained. Matter of fact, I ended up training for the same guy. We've had the same clients. And he came to Sonoyta, Arizona. That's where I started out. It's out in the middle of nowhere. It's like 30 miles from Nogales, Arizona, where I grew up. Little dusty, little fair track, but they had a fraternity there. And he shows up, like, he comes in with his fancy rig with the names on it. I mean, this guy, and here we are, we're just country little bumpkins, you know, and he goes in there and comes in there and just he's got every horse is by the who's who racing and I'll never forget I was on the paddock just watching and I go, man, there he is, that's Wayne Lucas, and I was with my dad, that's him, that's the guy, man, he's the man, you know. And so when you see him, I'm like, and then later on I went to Los Alamitos. I even called him up for a job once. He doesn't remember this. Thank God he doesn't remember. But I was graduating from high school, and I was wanting to be a jockey, but I wanted to go to work for him as an exercise boy. So he's in Bay Meadows at the time. So I wrote all this down. I was going to talk to him. I was scared to death to talk to him. I found out where he was staying. He's some hotel there. So I wrote these things down so I wouldn't stutter and So all of a sudden, it took me about a week to finally get the nerve up to call him.
Oh, jeez.
So I call him up, and I think back, like, I probably called him up, like, at 1 in the afternoon, which he's probably taking a nap because this guy gets up at 3 in the morning, you know. So I call him up. He said, Mr. Lucas, my name is Bob Baffert. I'm I just graduated from school, and I want to, you know, been wanting to jockey, but I really like to come to work for you as a gal boy. I like to learn, you know, I want to, you know, learn the game. And you know, he could have easily have said, you know what, I'm, you know, it's all right, but you know what, I got a lot of people, but you know, sorry, you know, I can't help you. He was like, you would have thought I was, he goes, oh man, you fit the description perfect, what I was looking for, and I just hired a guy a week ago.
Was I intuitive or what?
And he says,
pretty good.
Man, he goes, man, you were like, really? And I go, oh, really? Oh, yeah. I go, wow. And when I hung up the phone, I was like, wow, man, that guy, what a great, I mean, the impression, that guy is great. And I'm sure now he probably, yeah, all right. And that's the way he is. You know, he makes you feel good about yourself, you know. And so, and I think that's what he's, I mean, he could have run for president, you know. He'd blow by Trump, you know. He was like, it was one of those things where.
It's getting deep now.
And then, I was at Los Alamitos, and we went to Del Mar, this friend of mine that he knew. We were going to go, let's go to Del Mar with our cowboy hats. We drive down there, and we're in line to get in, and we see Wayne Lucas. So this guy that he knew, it was Vern Goodman. He trained first of all. He said, there's Wayne, let me go get maybe he'll give him some passes. So he goes down, and Wayne's coming in there. He's driving some fancy freaking Cadillac or something, whatever. He's all suited up. This guy looks like he's getting ready to, you know, give a speech or something. So, and we're just got our cowboy hats on, our jeans. He gives us here are these passes, but give them back to me in the paddock because I need those passes. So he gives us, like, there's six of us, these passes. I get mine. I'm like, the who's who. He had, like, the Klein. You had all these, like, all these big name Robert Moore. I think I was Robert Moore's wife, you know. And so we go in there and go in the paddock, and we give them to him. And they're at Del Mar. We're like in awe of everything, you know. And so he's got a horse in the feature. They said, I think I can win the feature. So we're watching. We bet a couple bucks. He wins the feature, and we see him later on. He says, hey, you guys should have come by the winner's circle. Well, we didn't, you know, we didn't want to go down there. We felt like it's a bunch of hayseeds, you know, we want to show up there. But he was just, I mean, he could have just blown us off or whatever, but that's not the way he is. You know, he's always been a great ambassador to racing, you know, and he does, you know, unfortunately, sometimes it's a lot of added pressure to us. You know, we want to be an ambassador. A lot of guys, you know, you're too popular, and you know, people get on you, and, like, you know, it's all about them or whatever. And, you know, but we can't help it that, you know, we've been blessed with all these good horses and we've won these things. But it's like, you know, we have a duty to, you know, really push the racing because, you know, it's a beautiful sport. We want to stay in it. It's been great to us. And so we need as many fans as possible.
Wayne, I remember you telling me a story once that you came here and won your first Preakness with Codex in 1980. Right. And you turned to your son, Jeff, and you said, hey, this isn't all that hard. We're going to win a whole bunch of these. And you had to wait another 5 years before
winning colors, yeah. And that was 80 to 88. I remember winning it, and I thought, you know, gosh, just they're making a big deal of this. Of course, we'd won some major quarter horse races, but I thought, this is not that big a deal. You know, we come in here, and we won the Hollywood Derby that year, the Santa Anita Derby, and now the Preakness. And I thought, it's no big deal. I found out later, these damn things are hard. We went 8 years before Winning Colors came along.
You've been there, Bob.
I remember I was training quarter horses, and I really became a fan of Winning Colors. You know, I was following her. She won the Santa Anita Derby, and I'd watch the show at night. They had a replay show, and I didn't know what had happened, so I'm watching the show, and I watched her win. Just so then I became a fan, so I always rooted for Wayne Lucas, everybody in Los Alamitos, and he wins the Kentucky Derby, and then he came to the Preakness, and that's when it was Woody Stevens.
Yeah, 49er.
49er, and there was a riff. There was like a big riff and everything, and I didn't like Woody Stevens, okay? I didn't like, how dare he, give my man Wayne, you know, a hard time, you know? It was like...
Woody was very, very intent on, he said, she will not get on the lead. She will not get an easy trip. And actually, they laid on her all the way down the backside, and he ran seventh. He'd used 49er just to make sure she wouldn't win. That's how upset he was that, you know, a new guy was coming into the game. And we ran third, but he ran seventh, and it was very controversial.
Well, I told you guys we were going to spend about 15 minutes together. I lied. It's been a little bit longer, but it's been enjoyable. Last question before I let you all go. What's different about Bob Baffert and Wayne Lucas now than when you came onto the Triple Crown scene all those years ago? Bob?
We both have stents. That's what this business has done to us, okay? It's not that the road to the Triple Crown means stents in your heart.
Yeah. We both have new wives.
Yeah, new wives. Exactly. So other than that, nothing's changed.
Everything's the same.
Yeah.
I can't thank you enough for spending a little time here. Really enjoyed the visit, and all the best moving forward and all the best on Saturday. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us. Thanks so much.
Right,
enjoy having us.
What a fitting way to end that interview. Stints and new wives. Would you expect anything else from Bob Baffert and Dwayne Lucas? Two of the best in the business, and boy, what an amazing 25 minutes that was. And my thanks to both of them one more time. for taking the time to do that. A really special visit, really enjoyable. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And again, if you missed any portion of this show, all you have to do is head back over to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast of this show and all of our programs, horseracingradio.net. And be sure to follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter as we now begin to turn our attention toward the Test of the Champion, the Belmont Stakes, coming up June 9th here on the network. You'll hear it worldwide, coast to coast, right here on HRN. And, of course, that Penn Mile coming up on June 2nd. Make sure you're locked into that one as well as we bring you that coverage live from Penn National. Been a lot of fun. Again, great to have you with me here tonight on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. For our producer, Lee Della Pina, I'm Mike Penna. We will talk to you next week. It's all Trainer Talk, and it's all presented by Fasig Tipton. Thanks for listening.